we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Francis Wheen.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a clipping from the Crewe Chronicle, read by Charlotte Green.
Professional lady seeks male friend to enjoy life with. I'm 42, romantic, tactile, and internally optimistic.
Thanks to Jay King of Cheshire for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Rebecca Front. Opposite them on my left, Linda Smith and Alan Corran. Jeremy, whose history revision received a very poor mark?
Ah, this is loathsome Hitlerite racist David Irving, who lost his libel case, but that won't stop him. He just keeps suing people because he's so bankrupted now that he just keeps suing people, and you can't get your legal costs back off him because he's double mortgaged his house 100 times. He's been utterly, obviously, disgraced, being a Nazi. But still, people compliment Irving on his great knowledge of historical documents. You think, well, yeah, he has got a great knowledge of historical documents in the same way that Harold Shipman has a great knowledge of medicine. Shipman's grasp of correct dotages is without parallel, clearly. Obviously, Irving knows a great deal about the Nazi period. Goebbels knew an enormous amount about the Nazi period. Front of his mind at all times.
Isn't it wonderful on the News Quiz to be able to call somebody a Nazi and a racist and a liar? No, you don't have to put alleged in front of it. It's terrific.
There was a nice detail that The Guardian picked up on, which was that apparently, because he defended himself in court, and apparently during a weary moment on the last day of his trial, he accidentally addressed the judge not as my lord but as mein Führer. Prejudiced the trial against him, I think.
2 points to Jeremy. Revisionist historian David Irving was adjudged a racist and anti-Semite who deliberately misrepresented and manipulated historical evidence in order to deny the Holocaust. Intimates of Mr. Irving said he was appealing, but nobody agreed with them. The defeated historian faces a legal bill in excess of $2.5 million, or by his reckoning, somewhat less than 100,000. Rebecca, whose pressure has caused schools some testing times?
Oh, this is this ridiculous thing of testing 7-year-old children. And David Blunkett was forced on the Today programme because lots of parents kept ringing in and saying, my child's been in tears for weeks. So he was forced, because they've got an election coming up, into saying, well, actually, we might rethink this because we don't really want floods of children in floods of tears. So I think that's what it is. It's child testing, which I actually think is quite a good thing. I've got a young baby and I only give him food that he can spell. I don't see there's anything wrong with that. He's a bit thin, but, you know, I don't see what the problem is.
If you don't test children at 7, how else are you going to label them as successes or failures for the rest of their lives? Seven is nothing. They're actually going to start it at 5. The government is going to start doing it at 5. You can turn over your fuzzy felt farm sets.
They're probably posting little exam forms into Cherry Blair as we speak.
You throughout your life, this thing, and you can't lie about it. You can't just put it on a form and think, well, they'll never question it, because they do have a job application. If you put down that your CV, they don't ask for some lemon curd to raffle, or you say your hobbies include walking, they don't say, well, could I see you walk from the filing cabinet to the window? And now, briskly, please. It's difficult. Oh, yeah.
2 points to Rebecca. Parents forced to rethink on tests for 7-year-olds after complaining their children were being put under too much stress. One 7-year-old's mum described the awful moment when she walked into a room at the primary school to be greeted with a sea of downcast, despondent little faces as she realised she stumbled into the staff room by mistake. Linda, which scientists asked some very difficult supplementary questions? Get it?
Supplementary questions? Oh, yes, I know what this is. Vitamins. Very, very dangerous. A lot of fun, yes. Fair enough, we have to acknowledge that. That's why the kids go mad for them. But not good for you, so just say no. It starts off with a little Haliborange. Next thing you know, you're mainlining Vitamin B like there's no tomorrow. Yeah, apparently vitamin pills, which I thought was some kind of flavoured Belgian lager, but apparently... apparently, yeah, these are very bad for you, and you mustn't have them. I think you can get everything you need from a glass of Sunny Delight myself. All in there, aren't they? All the major E vitamins, all the E137, E133, E139, tartrazine, all of it, really. Agent Orange, everything. One of those a week, that sees me, right?
I went into a health food shop once and there was this thing supporting itself on the counter. I went to get some vitamin pills and there was this amazingly wraith-like shape made Kate Moss looked like Joe Frazier, and tiny red eyes and sort of polenta shoes and this sort of emerald skin. And I thought, I really don't think I want to buy anything here. So that's health, is it? So I went to the pub next door. All these supplements are very bad for you, absolutely right.
Yes, researchers from the US National Academy of Sciences warned that high doses of vitamins do more harm than good. The report warned about taking a variety of vitamins. Too much C could lead to diarrhoea, too much A to hair loss, and too much E to dancing around your front room at 6 a.m. to the sound of a car alarm going off outside. Alan, have a listen to this. How's that? You messed about, I caught you up. How's that? Now that I've found where you're at, it's goodbye. Which sporting character has been caught with his hands in the till?
His hands in Cronje. And it's a terrible story because it's a terrible story because he's alleged to have been corrupted by subcontinental bookmakers. This is a country which is immeasurably richer than the subcontinent. I don't know why we didn't get to him. Either that, or our cricket team really is very, very good and they've been crooked for the past 40 years. That's why it's a terrible story. It's the fact we will now never, ever know whether any cricket team will ever win legitimately again. It's all about spread betting, provided you can be under 250 runs or whatever. It's very difficult if you're playing England. It must be murder if you've got a... You're Joe Coral and you say, well, you know, 8-1 on England winning and you've got to throw it. It's very hard.
Yes, 2 points for Alan. South African cricket captain Hansie Cronje has admitted taking cash from a bookie. England have denied throwing games. They back this up with hard evidence that no England cricketer is capable of deliberately throwing anything. And the scores at the end of round one, surprise, surprise, are 4-4. We start round two with an item seen in the Sunday People.
Lawyers for Wild Man star Lemmy have furiously complained about a story in last week's Sunday People about his sex life. We told how the 55-year-old Motorhead rocker handcuffed his lover to the bed for a 3-day sex and bondage session. Mr. Lemmy's lawyer said it was not 3 days and she was not handcuffed to the bed. It was 7 days and she was hung from the ceiling. We apologise unreservedly to Mr. Lemmy for any damage to his reputation.
Thanks to Peter Sargent and Dennis Mitali for that one. Jeremy, who doesn't want young women to waif goodbye to all fat?
It's bulimia. They've got a bulimia Kaiser. And it's about women trying to look like models and therefore getting too thin. So they had a working breakfast at Downing Street. Now, they had a big thing at Downing Street, but the trouble is, how do you listen to a government minister for more than 5 minutes and keep your breakfast down? That's the trouble. So they invite a load of people and they discussed it because the young girls are not eating enough because they're all trying to look like somebody who doesn't eat enough and has permanent diarrhoea. Whereas men, you know, men don't really find that attractive. I mean, men want a real woman. They want somebody, who's throwing up in the morning either because they're pregnant or because they drink pints.
Yes, all right. Women's Minister Tessa Jowell is holding a summit meeting at Downing Street with the bosses of a top modelling agency and a teenage magazine following concerns over the link between skinny models and eating disorders. The current look for women is big breasts and low hips. a style achieved effortlessly by many men.
Low hips?
No hips.
I thought you said low hips. Low hips, as in very short legs.
Well, I'm low hips.
Is this the new vogue? Women in hot pants that reach their shoes? Anyway, Corey, carry on. You're doing very well. Where's the very good man who usually does your job? Sorry, carry on.
He's bound and gagged backstage. Rebecca, your question, whose decision to swim against the tide of public opinion smelt a little fishy?
I'm assuming, because of the last word, that this is the genetically modified salmon.
You're right, fishy,
question.
That was the clue.
Yes,
yeah.
I thought so. Somebody's invented this genetically modified salmon, not God, somebody else, and which apparently grows to 6 times the size of a normal salmon. Giving everybody bigger fish to fry, I suppose. And
hell of a job to get into the tin.
Yeah. So anyway, they've invented this thing, and then Scottish salmon farmers have said, we won't use it. But there was also a bit of research about...
Do they cost too much to feed? Is it...
Probably not enough pesticides,
obviously,
I think.
These things eat less than any other salmon. I mean, you could bring up a spread on what these things eat.
Are you sure it's really not eating
well,
much? Or it's like very fat people who say, oh, I know, don't eat anything, you know.
Salmon
takes... You think it's deluding itself?
It crosses the Atlantic for 3,000 miles in order to shag. Could it be anything on the way? It could stop off at the Azores in, Fish Food R Us. They have been observed and they don't eat anything. They just grow.
There's something else about salmon. They get into fights.
That's right, but not with their brothers.
Yeah. That's family.
Yeah. He ain't heavy, he's my salmon brother.
Yeah, and they don't fight people who smell like them.
But I think it's fish who smell like them rather than
people. Yeah,
well, it's... Well, it's a great salmon. They only ever kill their own kind.
Yeah, it's crayfish right. Twins. They were.
But I suppose they look remarkably the same, salmon, don't they? So it's not like...
Not if you're a salmon, I don't think.
Well, you can say, oh, he's got his father's eyes.
Yeah, I'm sure he can.
But cold, loveless eyes, nonetheless. And on the side of the head, that's not attractive, is it? But, so if they identify each other by smell. So the police should use them, shouldn't they? To go looking for children who've fallen down mine shafts. They just wave a bit of the child's property in front of the salmon and they say, go! Go, Pinky, go! And off he goes. Comes back.
These are dogfish, are they? How much of this do you want?
American company AF Protein has announced that it's developed a genetically modified salmon that grows 10 times faster, actually, than other salmon. Well, it might be 100, I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's all made up, isn't it? The salmon are being reared on Prince Edward Island in Canada, as the nearby Prince Charles Island refused to have anything to do with them. Alan, who thinks service station food is a recipe for disaster?
Oh, it's him again.
Yeah.
It's about 90. Egg on Rone, who says egg on plate, is no good in service station. I mean, he goes to these places, he's been pumping this stuff down for years. He looked perfectly all right to me. He was a wonderful sleek coat, one bright eyes, little waggy tail. And he's been living for the past 80 years on greasy eggs and terrible chips and awful bacon. And every year or so, because things have been a bit quiet lately, other food guides having rather taken over from him, he goes into paper and tells us our motorway food is bad. We know that. It has to be bad. It's always been bad. Never get any better. And I don't know what it was this time. It's Granada or Little Chef or something like that. And he just says it's terrible.
What I don't like with those places, they've always got some euphemistically jolly-sounding name for the cafeteria. It's always called Country Kitchen. You think, what country? Albania?
Well, I can never order it. I can never order in those places because it doesn't say things like egg and chips. It says things like Smuggler's Grill. I can't sort of bring myself to order it. I'd have a cup of tea and a sandwich, but the sandwiches have all got very strange names as well, and they've all got things like deviled whelk in them. And I don't know whether egg and run is right or wrong. I just get the petrol and go away, usually.
Well, they're very expensive, Alan, if you do stop for a snack. You get a cup of tea and a banana, and I'd get up to the counter and say to the woman, sorry, I've only got a £10 note. She said, you'll have to put that banana back then. And they use all this terrible American marketing language. I asked for a small cup of coffee, because I wasn't very thirsty, just slightly thirsty, a small cup of coffee. And she says, oh, we don't do small. So I said, well, what do you do? So we do regular and large. So I said, well, what's regular? I said, well, it's medium, really. So I said, how big's medium? She said, well, it's quite small.
He's right about the eggs. There is a remarkable greasiness to the eggs. They can't keep them on the plate. You get it at the till, and it's like curling. They go like bullets. If you stumble, you've got a couple of yolky frisbees whizzing across the... And nothing stays on the plate because it's all swimming in this petrol.
Salvador Dali platter.
Indeed, yes. Memory.
It's the fashion now as well for bacon to be crispy, American style, isn't it? Because it used to have that cool, flesh-coloured bacon with the tapeworm garnish. That's what you wanted.
Now, that crispy bacon, you could kill someone, you could stab someone with it and not leave a mark on their body. You know, crisp.
That's my grease mark.
They always make one mistake, though, don't they?
I was wondering why you'd asked us all here, Linda.
Jeremy, why did the Christian fruit pickers decide to become two martyrs to their cause?
Oh, this is really sweet. They're tomato growers, in an effort to grow better-aligned tomatoes, have brought in feng shui consultants. And these Methodists have gone all mad. They're Methodists, and they've gone all angry, and they're saying, you know, these are the forces of darkness. This is the work of the evil one. Now, most people that say things like that, most of us, we've had a few drinks, but these are Methodists, right? So they're, you know, completely stone-cold sober coming out with this. But I do agree with them, actually, because I think feng shui practitioners should be harried and burnt for witchcraft. And even if it does turn out to be true, it shouldn't do. By any reason, so people who believe in it should get no credit for having been right all along. They should be burnt anyway. All this alternative stuff is rubbish. It's got to be, hasn't it? This word holistic crept into our language. Nobody invited it. No one knows when it first... One day it just appeared in dictionaries throughout the world. Well, there's no W in it, but it means the whole thing must be treated. So you catch your toe in the lawnmower and they have to treat the lawnmower first. Because that's really the cause of what's wrong. So the lawnmower has to learn to deal with its aggression. All absolute rubbish. Herbalism. It's medieval. These people are trying to drag us back to the time when we just died. Oh, Black Death, bit of tarragon you want on there. Feng shui. Anyway, tomatoes actually, are very into it, apparently.
Actually, it's not feng shui.
Is it feng shui?
Feng shui. I checked with a fully accredited newsreader, Charlotte Green.
Say feng shui for us, Charlotte.
Feng shui.
Oh, you dirty cow.
That's perfectly true. Sunday school teacher and his son have quit their jobs as tomato pickers in protest at their nursery's ungodly decision to introduce feng shui. Feng shui booth, QC, as she's known in the trade. Feng shui is the ancient Chinese art of sticking the telly on the other side of the room. The art has become... The art's become increasingly popular with the middle classes. It's defined as feng, a Chinese word which means sense, and shui, which means more money than. Linda, listen to this. These people are all so young, they don't remember it. This is the dawning of the... You must remember that. Oh, well, never mind. That's from Hare. Linda, who delivered some cutting remarks about the government's assertiveness training campaign?
Oh, very important news story. Hairdressers, apparently, very upset because the government, they're trying to do this assertiveness training for girls and saying, we don't want them ending up in jobs like hairdressing. And hairdressers, you know, are actually a bit miffed about this. But I think the government here have got a bit of an outdated idea of what hairdressers are. Because, you know, you go to have your hair cut in the West, it costs a fortune, and they're all these glamorous designer clothed figures. They're all on Richard and Judy and things. It's not like some little backstreet salon now, is it? It's all trendy. Well, if they offer you something for the weekend, it's a loan of their gîte in the south of France.
I've got an assertive hairdresser, it's why I look this way.
Yeah, that does look like a grudge match.
Yes.
Girls' barbers don't half make a fuss, though, don't they? If you go to a girl's barber, they have to make you a cup of coffee and give you a blanket bath and change your dressing and everything before...
It's just as well this is radio, so people can't see what's happened to your hair. He's got a quiff.
Yes. As opposed to flesh-coloured highlights.
Yes.
I don't have to remember hair, you know, Francis. I have hair.
You're quite right, Linda. 2 points, I suppose.
Oh, what do you mean, you
That's
suppose?
That's a 30 point.
Well, have you ever thought of a career as a hairdresser?
No, because all they ever say is, have you booked your holiday yet?
No, they also say, is the water all right for you? They've got a phrase for every situation.
But you don't always want an enema at the barber's, do you? Cut me bloody hair, can't
you? Yes, I think that's quite enough of that hairdressing stuff. It's a very touchy subject for Alan and me. Mm. And the scores at the end of round three are, hardly worth mentioning, 12 all. Before we start the final round, here's an item from the Marathon News official programme.
Advice for marathon runners. A dehydrated runner will end up going nowhere fast. This can be the cumulative effect of drinking too little. A simple way to test if you're drinking enough is to check the colour of your urine. Please do this in private.
Our thanks to Mrs. Jean Hobbs, who will be running on the day. It says here. I don't know if she's in the marathon, but anyway. Jeremy, your musical clue. Listen to this. Right, in a shameless Hansi Cronje-style thing to break the deadlock, I'll give a bonus point to anyone who can tell me who that was. It is a Hansi Cronje thing, isn't it?
I must say,
they just want money, they won't answer
it. What a supply chairman. Yeah. It's quite bold to try and start tampering with the basic premise of the game.
Don't say anything, we'll lose a point. He's got that Irving look in his eye.
Well, someone's got to put their nose ahead.
You could get a point for telling us who that was.
That's a very good point. That was Billy Fury singing Run to My Lovin' Arms.
All right, ask me the question.
All right, why is the bedroom the best place to train for the marathon?
I don't know, but Rebecca has just written down sex before marathon. Yeah. Makes me think confectioners are getting very demanding these days. Is it to do with the London Snickers?
Yeah, London Marathon. This is what Rebecca knows.
You know, don't you?
Well, I think it's a report that, in fact, my father would be very interested in because he ran the marathon some years ago. And apparently, if you have sex the night before, I really wish I hadn't brought my father into this. My father. If you have sex before running a marathon, the night before running a marathon, apparently it can make you up to 14 minutes faster. However,
doing what?
If you have. If you have sex during the marathon, then clearly that can add on, you know.
I think
well,
sex
probably
instead
30
of the
seconds
marathon,
or something.
Really. It'd be better, wouldn't it? Sex instead of.
You run a faster marathon if you have sex the night before.
I don't know. Don't blame me. Apparently, yes.
Is that if you're itching or something?
It may affect the style of your running, but yeah, no, it does. Apparently, it speeds you up. So I'm told.
What is the point of the marathon? If people want to go running, why can't they go running in their own neighbourhood in their own time? Why do they have to turn up at the same time as everybody else who happens to and say, oh, I'm doing it for charity? You're not doing it for charity. You're doing it for yourself because you want people to like you. Because it happens that you are capable of running for a very, very long time, which I'm sorry to Rebecca's father, but it's a completely pointless thing to be able to do. It's just not needed to be able to run that far. If you were escaping from somebody, they'd have given up after 2 or 3 miles.
Rebecca, which year was it that your father ran the marathon?
Just a question.
Not last year?
No.
It's a bit bloody unfair, that's the question.
Jeremy, your question. What is your name?
A survey of last year's London Marathon runners showed many believed that sex improved their running performance. The evidence suggests that having sex does make you run faster. especially if your partner comes home to find you at it.
I was thinking you must be a bit noisy in the stables the night before the Grand National.
2 points. Alan, who's been accused of pandering to their charges' sexual needs?
Yes, there's an attempt, there's always an attempt to save the giant panda. I remember Ted Heath brought one over to breed with, or something like that, long time ago. And it wasn't really good for either of them. They're giving pandas Viagra, which is a wonderful, wonderful thought. I mean, if they run in the marathon, there's 26,000 pandas with erections running through London.
Yes. I think the female pandas try a bit too hard, end up looking a bit tarty with all that eye makeup. Men prefer a more natural look, I think, really. There's a list of things they try, giving them different environments, and one was letting them watch television.
Mm-hmm.
When has that ever helped anyone have sex? Nodding off in front of Newsnight.
I don't know, that Kirsty Walk's rather a foxy lady.
Like you or the panda talking?
Attractive to the older man.
Maybe that pandas don't engage in normal practices to mate. It's just occurred to me to wonder why they've got two black eyes. But I don't want to go on with that joke. Yes. Oh, Jeremy, you're with me. God bless you.
That's the mating call of the greater panda.
Creatures of habit, though, aren't they? They only eat one thing. They just eat bamboo. Nothing too spicy. Just the bamboo. Oh, no sex, no. I'm going to be up early. Got a bamboo to eat tomorrow. Oh, I don't know where the days go. Of course, that was when China was China.
Yes, 2 points to Alan. Now let's have a look at the final scores. Jeremy and Rebecca have 16, but I'm afraid this is what comes of taking backhanders from all the contestants. Alan and Linda have 16. Before we leave, here's a cutting scene in The Week magazine by Michael McKenna of Homefirth.
A dog which won first prize for keen intelligence and unquestionable obedience in Shendai, Japan, turned out to be stuffed. Of course the dog's obedient, it's dead, explained a furious runner-up. But the dog's owner refused to return the £1,000 prize, insisting nobody said the pets had to be alive.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corrin, Jeremy Hardy, Linda Smith and Rebecca Front. The chairman was Francis Ween and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.